Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 8th, 2020, from my home studio in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look at how graduates are facing this new COVID-19 world. We take you to the latest protest outside of the governor's mansion and hear what organizers want to see happen and why USC football coach Will Muschamp marched with his players. We also hear about an increase in domestic violence cases and the latest growing numbers from DHEC. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1-minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and what's happening in your world. Whether you're a police officer working the streets or a frontline medical professional or someone working at Publix or Harris Teeter, let us know what's going on. Or if you're just, you know, raising your kids, your family, or just staying home or going out. We want to know. 803-563-7169. And if you are staying in and have some free time, join us for our Lead Zoom Happy Hour this Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Are we late to the Zoom happy hour scene? Sure, but that doesn't mean you still can't come. We've already had about a dozen RSVPs. It's going to be pretty informal, but I can tell you we're going to have some great guests. Some of our old favorites are going to be on. AT will be there. Caitlin Bird down in Charleston with the Post and Courier will be on. And I'm pretty sure Jamie Lovegrove, Mayon Schechter, and Meg Kennard will be there too. Just got to rally those guys in. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be informal. We'll be talking about the primaries and just really with the news of the day, what everyone's been covering. And we want to hear your questions, so be sure to jump on the Zoom. We'll have a link in our show notes for you to register, and we'll send you an Eventbrite link. And we'll go from there at 6:30 p.m. Thursday. Bring a beverage. Now, on a more serious note, currently in South Carolina, the spread of COVID-19 continues to accelerate and is not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 557 deaths, and currently there are 14,800 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of June 8th at 4 p.m. Cases in the state have continued to rise for the sixth straight week, and we saw multiple new highs last week, which pushed the total weekly case count to 2,108. That's the first time we've reached the 2,000 weekly case mark. And now here we are on Monday with another new high at 542 cases. People, you got to keep your guard up, you got to keep your distance, you have to wear a mask, and you have to wash your hands. That's the only way we'll get these numbers back down to levels we were seeing. Of the 7,004 inpatient beds currently used in the state, 507 are occupied by patients who have either tested positive or are under investigation for COVID-19. And again, 507 beds, that is a new high number as well. Just be aware, though, that DHEC estimates the recovery rate of COVID-19 for the first 8,800 cases is 83%. If you need to get a test, find a mobile testing site near you at accelerate.sc.gov. There are more than 100 available around the state. In our last episode, you heard Senator Tim Scott talk about racial inequality and police brutality in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. Senator Scott was a guest on my show This Week in South Carolina, as was Columbia Mayor Steve Benjamin. Here's a part of my conversation with Mayor Benjamin about how the city of Columbia handled recent protests that turned destructive.
I'm always encouraged, particularly when I hear younger voices helping to shape the debate. I think last week, immediately leading up to the Saturday protest, the chorus of voices that we began to hear, some that we've never heard from before, as you talk about issues of social justice or racial inequality, were chiming in, and that was very encouraging. I felt that we had a moment where there was this great synchronicity, that was manifesting itself in Saturday, and then Saturday afternoon happened. Mm-hmm.
And did that get overshadowed? I mean, do you feel like that the positivity got lost because of the destruction? You had cop cars burning, you had shots fired. What was it like that day for you, what you were witnessing and seeing that such a change from earlier in the day?
It was a very painful moment. Very painful moment. I'd come out to the Feastial March earlier. I came out and passed out water and masks. I just try to remind everyone that we were indeed still in the middle of a pandemic, and that we needed to do whatever we could to be socially responsible, social distance, and if you couldn't, at very least, with some type of protective face wear. So I passed out hundreds of masks and at least dozens of bottles of water. And then I went home, went to actually spend some time with my family, and I watched as the protest then migrated over to the police department and came right back downtown. And make sure that I was able to help our chief of police and the other assembled law enforcement officers do their jobs and give them civilian leadership that's not law enforcement leadership. And it was heartbreaking. I wish I could find more colorful, vivid words to articulate it, but it was heartbreaking. You know, when you live in a city, like some of us have been here just maybe a few months, others have been here the entirety of our adult lives, and my families have been here for some time, very different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. We're blessed to represent, you know, people from every one of the 194 sovereign nations of the world live here in Columbia, the metropolitan area. I've been blessed to live in the city. The city's given me everything I have, from a beautiful family and everything else. So to watch that manifestation of that pain and hurt and suffering turn into violence, mm-hmm. it was heartbreaking, if I had to use one word.
Do you think police use the right tactics? We have about 2 minutes left, Mayor. I just want to get your thoughts on how the police broke up crowds using certain dispersal methods. Do you think that was appropriate? Did you give them any special instructions to do any, maybe give more latitude to protesters? Or what was it like to have those calls being made?
The officers made a lot of tough calls, in action, in which there was literally, as you mentioned, this wasn't just graffiti. You're talking about police cars burning, people being assaulted, personal property damage, commercial property damage, and as that was going on, there were no arrests. I mean, and eventually, I made the call to call for the 6 p.m. curfew. And ask them to disperse the crowds. I wish I could say everything was done perfectly. It wasn't. We don't live in a perfect world. But I do believe that the men and women in law enforcement did the very best job they could under very difficult circumstances.
And the governor was on a conference call with the president and other governors talking about, the president was talking about the need to be more dominant to really help crack down on these situations. I think he was actually alluding to more the bad actors. Our governor did say that, you know, we did see improvement in Charleston. They started using the National Guard on Sunday evening and they didn't really have any incidents. Do you see that as something necessary to happen here in Columbia?
Absolutely not. No, we don't need the military on the streets of Columbia. And I won't speak to the president or the governor's position on the issue. I heard the governor responded to some things the president said, but on the tone and tenor and the substance of the engagement we've heard from the president so far, I disagree with it.
You can watch that full episode on youtube.com/SouthCarolinaETV and hit that subscribe button while you're there. Moving on, peaceful protests have continued around the state, including here in Columbia. Hundreds of protesters met outside of the governor's mansion on Friday to rally and deliver a list of 8 demands. Rather, legislative actions dealing with police reform that they want to see made into a reality, such as expanded body camera use and funding, outlawing the use of military equipment in police departments, improved training for officers, including de-escalation training, and more. The road in front of the governor's mansion was closed to vehicular traffic, and a line of metal bike rack-style barricades separated the protesters from the governor's mansion fence of brick and steel. Behind that fence were dozens of law enforcement officers spread throughout the mansion grounds, and a police helicopter circled overhead. But this protest was completely peaceful and respectful, with organizers stressing that people do not shout slurs at the officers behind the fence who watched attentively. I was walking around waiting for things to start and saw a crowd marching up Laurel Street. While shooting video, I recognized University of South Carolina football coach Will Muschamp. Despite his masked face, his dark swooping hair is instantly recognizable and he was surrounded by nearly his entire team. He spoke about the decision to participate in the march days later during a teleconference on Monday, June 8th.
I share the anger and frustration that we have witnessed across the country. My thoughts and prayers go out to the family and friends of George Floyd and others who have seen a similar fate. The police brutality and misconduct that occurred in Minneapolis What has happened in other places in our country, including right here in South Carolina, is unacceptable and needs to stop. Enough is enough. It is sad that in 2020 we're having these conversations. I was very fortunate. My dad was a history teacher, and if we weren't playing sports or watching sports, we were talking about history, and one of his favorite topics was the 1960 Civil Rights Movement. These recent tragic events that have occurred, it brought a lot of memories back to me and my dad talking about Dr. King. He admired Dr. King and always talked in how we can learn from our history to help us with our future. So last week, I asked Levy Johnson, who's a friend of mine here in Columbia, to talk with our football team, his son Chris, who's a chaplain for Coach Martin in the basketball, and also Charles Jackson Jr., who runs our spiritual development program. Mr. Johnson was part of the civil rights movements in the 60s. The first thing he talked to our players about was having the right to vote, and that gives you a voice. And we did this as a team on Friday. We went down and registered. Most of our guys registered to vote a lot, did it on the line.
Muschamp said he'll continue bringing speakers for his players and provided some takeaways from the past few days.
I think the two words as a team that we took from this was educating and communicating. The more you know about somebody, the more you feel comfortable with them, and that's what we've got to continue to do. The two unacceptable words at this time as a team that we talked about was silence and violence. Actions are louder than words. I can put out a paragraph on social media. That does nothing compared to what we did Friday as a football team. But the actions are what we need. We can't be silent about racial inequality at this time. Violence, Dr. King once said, hate begets hate, violent begets violence, and that's still true today. That's not the answer for what we need to do as we continue to move forward.
Bringing it back to COVID-19, Coach Muschamp did say they probably violated some social distancing guidelines, though all players had masks on. But there are substantial efforts being taken to ensure player safety.
During the protest, we felt like that's what we were doing the right thing, and that's why we did it. We're testing the temperature and the symptoms every single day, and unless any of those change, then we don't plan on testing at this time. We have tested every player, we have tested every staff member, and anybody that enters the Ken and Cindy Long facility has been tested and cleared before they're allowed to come back here. I felt it was important for our football team to make a statement, and I told our team that Carol and I were going to be there on Friday. They're more than welcome to walk if they wanted to, and our entire team, other than some guys that had graduation that were not able to come to the march, but our entire team took part.
Close to 1,000 people marched the mile and a half from the governor's mansion down to Main Street, where diners at Cantina 76 looked on, and a few people stood outside of office buildings with camera phones as the mass of people headed to the statehouse in the hot midday sun. On the statehouse steps, organizers again read out their 8 reforms they want to see put into place, including eliminating fines and fees for low-income offenders, improving civil asset forfeiture laws, and having police departments pay for lawsuits with their own money. House Minority Leader Todd Rutherford was there on the statehouse steps to receive the demands and issue a few of his own.
Representative Todd Rutherford, do you accept the state's demands?
Not only do I accept them, I have a complaint. Please tell me why there are only 8 things on this list. Because at a minimum, number 9 should read,
"Come on,
stop telling us it's just a couple of bad apple cops."
Come on.
Because we all know what happens with a couple of bad apples. It spoils the whole bunch.
Come on!
We've been saying for years, this is a problem. And they said back, well, are you sure? Isn't that just an isolated incident? And we watched Walter Scott. And we watched LeVar Jones. And we watched Tamir Rice. And we watched, and we watched, and we watched.
Yes, come on.
And they kept saying, it's just a couple of bad apples. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is a systematic problem, and we're going to change the whole thing.
I and some other members of the media spoke with a Richmond Democrat moments later about moving things forward legislatively.
I believe, and that's what I stated as my demand to this crowd, that they not stop, that they not give up.
We have seen enough, we've heard enough. The number of people that I've represented that have been shot by the police, that have been killed by the police, that have been maimed by the police, that have had their rights violated time and time again. I'm amazed to this day the number of people that are watching TV and see the crowd control that's being used in other places and are going, oh, there's another bad apple. The system is broken and we have got to fix it. I stand here on the grounds of the State House where I remember being in an office up there years ago dealing with the Highway Patrol chaining people to bumpers. We are past that. We should be past that. But we ain't far enough past it. We don't need to be here today.
What legislation are you going to put forth out there in order to help tear down the system that has been created so far?
So I've already been talking to a number of legislators. You saw the meeting with the Black Caucus the other day. But I've been meeting with Republicans as well and talking to them about what it is that we're going to do to stop this problem. This is not a Democratic problem, not a Republican problem. This is a problem for humanity. You can't, these crowds will not materialize if it's just a bunch of Democrats or a bunch of Republicans or a bunch of Black people. This is people that are saying, I can't watch this anymore. This is people watching a video of a man die on TV and wondering why the police did nothing to stop it. And people are sick and tired of it, and they should be.
After the event ended and people peacefully left, a few hundred remained to hold signs and chant along Gervais Street. I caught up with four of the I Can't Breathe SC organizers. I asked Demetrius Hill about why it was important for protesters not only to be peaceful, but also respectful.
We have to change the perspective in which protest has in America's eyes. Because when they hear protest, they think loot, they think burning, they think violence, but that's not what protest means. Protest is a right that every American has. Every American has a right to protest, and we're trying to change the culture and the perception of people watching us right now. We are peaceful, and we are peace facilitators. We continue to facilitate peace through our crowds. And like you said earlier, yes, I arrived and I let them know. You can be angry. Shout in a positive way. Because when there's negative entities already working, we have to be positive. We have no choice. No choice. So we will continue to push through peacefully. And I know a lot of people at home asking, well, when is the last protest? When our policies are changed and our demands are met, and when our police officers know our community and we can go up to them and talk to them and they can address us as well. That's when we're gonna stop. Mm-hmm. But until then, you may see us every day. But guess what? We come in peace. Remember that. We come in peace.
Peace.
And happy primary day. June 9th is primary day if you're listening on this Tuesday. And it's the latest stop on the road to the November general election. We'll have a recap in Thursday's show, and be sure to jump on our Zoom happy hour on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. The link is in our show notes. We have some breaking economic news.
Ooh.
We're officially in a recession. Sorry. Shocking, right? The National Bureau of Economic Research on Monday said a 128-month expansion, the longest dating to 1854, came to a halt in February. Now, a recession is typically defined as two straight quarters of negative GDP, but the NBER has leeway to take into account the depth of a contraction, how quickly it occurs, and how much of the economy is affected, according to MarketWatch. So how does this bode for graduates? Well, South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen has this report.
22-year-old Maddie Wallace sips a soda on the patio of a downtown cafe in Charleston. She is fresh-faced, suntanned, a recent college graduate. She watches as a line winds around the restaurant, not because it's crowded, but because of social distancing due to the coronavirus. For Maddie, nothing has gone as planned this year.
On spring break, that's when it was declared a global pandemic.
Maddie was in the Bahamas when she learned she would not return to school. The coronavirus pandemic shut down the College of Charleston campus. She finished her classes online in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
At home, in my childhood bedroom. My mom would peek into my room and be like, "Are you done yet?" I'm like, "Mom, I'm in class."
There were no goodbyes to classmates and friends. No graduation. It's been postponed until October. Commencement literally means beginning, but Maddie never felt a sense of closure.
I mean, your last day of college, your last class, you're like, whoa, this is the last classroom I'll ever be in. So I never really got that. I just kind of pressed submit on my last exam, and I was like, I guess I'm done now.
Uncertainty. That's what the class of 2020 faces. How do they find that first job when the closing of a nation has so many out of work?
A lot of my friends that had jobs are getting their jobs taken away. And then a lot of the jobs online are sort of disappearing, or you'll go apply to the job and then you'll get to the end and they'll say, oh, this job offer no longer exists.
With her mother's help, Maddie moved back to Charleston. Her part-time retail job reopened, but her dream of working in marketing or public relations, using that college degree she earned, is beginning to feel out of reach.
You know, it still is summer, and these students have been through a lot.
Erin Halford is the employer relations manager at the college's career center. She still sees opportunities in healthcare, manufacturing, and sales. And she encourages graduates to embrace every opportunity, even those they would have never considered before.
Some recent grads are really maybe waiting to see if something better comes along. And we don't know that it will.
She encourages grads to continue networking. Many internships have been canceled, but there are new micro-internships, short-term company projects to get a foot in the door. She also advises former students to volunteer and reach out to alumni, like the school offers in Zoom chat sessions.
I think what we're going to do today is, if you have specific questions, if you'll just type them into the chat box in the Zoom.
Seth Burrell graduated in 2015.
Keywords are so very important when you're using online applications.
He's grateful for the many mentors he's had along the way. And if there's one piece of wisdom he'd like to pass along.
You don't want to tie your emotional well-being to a job, especially in this time period where it's so uncertain.
Maddie is trying to stay optimistic.
You just kind of have to be patient, wait it out, do what you can in this moment. If you're too negative, then you can just get swallowed up in negativity. And
like that line at the restaurant, life can be about timing and, yes, luck. Perhaps the class of 2020 will look back and find patience and perseverance are what define them, not a pandemic.
It'll be interesting to see what the world will look like when this all is done.
So that's some blah economic news right there. But be strong, graduates. I remember graduating in the middle of the last economic crisis / recession, and I'm here now to tell you that you'll make it through. It's not easy going. Life and work will take you to places you didn't think you'd go, but such challenging times make you resilient. Embrace it. You might even have a podcast when it's all said and done. In our medical segment, Bobby Connor talks with Dr. Ashley Hink about reports of increasing rates of domestic violence or intimate partner violence during the pandemic. Dr. Hink is a general trauma and critical care surgeon at MUSC.
Dr. Hink, what's going on in your area of medicine recently during the pandemic with regards to patients presenting at the hospital with injuries from intimate partner violence?
What we're seeing is, after the first couple of weeks where people were really staying home, we had a drop off in all types of injuries, including violence. But really after that, we started seeing an increasing number of injuries related to intimate partner violence, certainly more than we typically see. And we're seeing very severe injuries from the range of gunshot wounds to stabbings to blunt force trauma from beatings. And it's mostly impacting women, which is traditionally the case for intimate partner violence. But we're also seeing men, and certainly this occurs in all types of relationships and sexual orientations. And so it's certainly very concerning given the increase that we're seeing.
And why these increases right now? What's your opinion?
The COVID pandemic is creating circumstances that create stress in relationships. people feel isolated. Sometimes they're financially dependent on partners and they feel like they're stuck and cannot leave them. It also is creating situations where they're spending more time together. And so the increasing time together compounded by stress can elevate the risk of violence and tension within a relationship that was already present beforehand.
What do you do to treat patients in this scenario, and how do you get honest information from the patient about what caused these injuries?
The first thing that we do is we address their injuries. And so we make sure that medically and surgically, we're doing everything that we can to adequately treat them. We also make sure to offer them a safe and private environment. And sometimes that means giving them an alias name to make sure that no one knows that they're there and we can keep them safe. Our security is always involved. And in addition, we have a referral process to one of our MUSC advocate social workers that specializes in intimate partner violence and child abuse. And they help them navigate services so that we can put in place a safety plan for when they're ready to leave, and to also help them with services in the community and potentially legal and law enforcement services.
And from your vantage point, why so important to get help in this kind of situation?
We want victims and individuals experiencing this to reach out, number one, to get the care for injuries and also for their mental health and overall well-being, and also for their children who might be exposed to this. And the bottom line is when violence escalates, people are at risk of potentially experiencing a fatal injury.
And what can someone do right now who is in an unsafe situation to get help?
First and foremost, they can reach out to a loved one so they're not going through this alone. Talk to a friend, talk to a family member or a coworker that can be a source of support. Secondly, there's a number of both national and local resources, including the National Domestic Violence Hotline, that they can reach out to and talk to anytime. There are a number of community resources throughout South Carolina that offer counseling, support, and potentially emergency shelter that they can reach out to and see what services are available.
Dr. Hank, thanks for this update about increasing intimate partner violence during the pandemic.
Thank you so much, Bobby, for having me.
Always a difficult topic to talk about, but an important one. Thank you, Bobby, for that report. And you can find that and more stories on southcarolinapublicradio.org. Also, we have a link to resources for those who may find themselves or a loved one in a domestic violence situation. Now, this is our wind-down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you a medical professional on the front lines of this pandemic? Are you protesting in the streets? Are you staying hunkered down at home and still isolating because case numbers continue to climb? Tell us at 803-563-7169. Leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on at 803-563-7169. You might just get on the pod. No, you'll get on the pod. Do we have any voicemails? Check the machine.
We do. It is from a friend of the pod.
Ew.
You'll recognize her. Regular contributor. At least this will be her second time on. But let's roll it.
Roll tape.
Hello, lead. This is Brinson Fox, your lead horticulturalist. I'm calling to say that I'm pretty passionate about the 3 podcasts a week, mostly because when I'm outside working, I love to listen to podcasts, and it's nice to have you guys come up on my feed 3 times a week. So that's my 2 cents. So if you're going to transition from not talking about COVID 3 times a week, it'd be awesome if you transition to doing something 3 times a week. You know, I selfishly want it. All right. Talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Brinton, oh, our lead horticulturalist, thank you so much. We love being in your feed 3 times a week. I guess we're pretty much committed to it.
We really thought we were going to get back to one, everyone tells us no. Yeah. We screwed that up a little bit.
Yeah, but
that's on us.
Yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. We're going to live it. We're going to embrace it. Like I said, you're just going to go and do it. So, but I do want to mention, Brinton, that I ordered some plants. AT, I'm talking to you. I'm not talking to her. I ordered some plants.
You can talk to her. It's okay.
I'm talking to you now, Brinton. AT, you can't listen. I ordered some plants in April on 420. Look at that. 420, 2020. Boy, oh boy.
Are you talking about
sending
weed to your
house? No, I did not order marijuana.
House.
Okay. That's funny, okay. Though.
No marijuanos. Very good.
I ordered from Direct Gardening, which is an interesting website because I read some bad reviews about it, but I still ordered anyway. You don't get the full size plant. You get like, you know, a little seedling basically. And I ordered I ordered a banana plant because I want a big banana plant. You know, they grow to be really cool looking, but it's now I just got in the mail today. This has been 2 months.
It's a little, pipsqueak.
It's a little guy. And then a bird of paradise, which will be really cool when it grows up too. And a gardenia, which I'm going to wait till next year for that. So got a lot of new plants in the mail. That was, you know, during the heady days of self-isolation when everyone was, you know, we had Brenton on talking
hashtag
about.
Hashtag 420. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, I can't buy any of those illegal plants. So I'm like, what kind of plants can I buy? And I should
I also
went to my local gardening shop, Gardener's Outpost too, and got some plants there too. But I wanted these.
Do you know what this sounds like to me, Gavin?
A ramble of like, someone who tried to order marijuana online?
It sounds like adult good news.
Oh, yeah. That was adult good news there, masquerading as news. So I got these really great plants, and now I'm just looking for the right potter, like the right planters. Like, oh, where's the right pot? Who? If you guys have any great pot advice, and I'm talking about the pots to put the plants in, guys, stop with the 420 connections. But, like, where do you get your favorite, like, pots? Let us know. Tell us what you're planting. 803-563-7169. We're always here for you.
Do you have any other good adult good news?
Just the fact that you have not mentioned Infinite Jest multiple times, and I wanted to get you to mention it.
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
I thought about this the other night. I was like, I gotta get him to say Infinite Jest without realizing he hasn't said it in a while. So
that's adult bad news. I also have adult good news. I got a baking steel
Ooh.
In the mail, which is
goodness
so
gracious.
Lame. So lame. It's 16-inch by 16-inch slab of steel, and it weighs 27 pounds.
Oh, I can't wait for that to get piping hot so you can take it out and burn your hands.
Yeah, and destroy myself. No, but this is going to up my pizza game big time, people.
For
okay?
the crust,
so,
right? For the crust heads
be scared.
Out there?
Yeah, my crust life, my crust lust.
Hashtag crust lust.
And I have adult bad news.
Ooh,
is that,
no.
Yeah, adult bad news.
Did you get a speeding ticket or something?
No. There are jars in my fridge that are just vibrating next to each other, and I can't find which ones they are. And so it's just buzzing really bad.
I sense fridge reorganization is on the horizon.
I'm like, I was fuming with the door open, moving all the jars, and it's still buzzing, driving me crazy.
Oh
so
God.
If anyone knows how to help, just please let me know.
This is
I'm
like
losing
some
it here.
Adult bad news.
That's what I'm saying. I need a sad guitar riff to play after you say adult bad news.
Right.
All fridges vibrate.
Yeah. Mine is not in great shape these days.
Every time I've ever been to your house, the handle to your fridge has been broken and you've never fixed it.
I don't know how you fix it. Can someone tell me how to fix it? It doesn't...
Tape it! Glue it! Oh, anything!
This sounds
it's
like
annoying!
Flex Seal! Just get some Flex Seal!
Flex Seal! That's a lot of damage! All right, take it out.
Yeah,
we got to talk about Flex Seal. Let's close it out.
I live a chaotic life, you know this. My life is chaos. Oh, and I also want to thank everyone. Thank you to all of our fans always, of course. We love you. But we have 100 ratings on Apple Podcasts. I just discovered this. And nearly all of those are 5 stars. Yay! And we also got a great review from a person named Ohio Vic. Thank you, Ohio Vic, for the kind words. And we'd love to hear from y'all. So leave us a review. Give us some 5 stars. You know, whatever you feel comfortable doing, we'd appreciate it because it just lets us know that we're doing a good job. Everyone likes to hear that. And you can keep, and also remember, tune in to the Lead Happy Hour, Zoom Happy Hour, Thursday at 6:30 p.m. We're gonna have a lot of great discussions, some beverages, some chuckles, and just some good talks.
It's gonna be a lot of spoofs, a lot of goofs, some news.
Like, I don't even know how much news we're gonna talk about. It might just be everyone just venting for a little bit.
Spoofs and goofs certified.
Yeah, can confirm. And keep up with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, be sure to take a break from the news after you get your fill of it. It can be a lot to deal with. Go take a walk. I need to do a walk. I haven't been walking as much as I used to. What's going on? You can also follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson, and I'll let you know the latest news and what's happening in the state. Also, we are always here for you, our Lead community, throughout this week and as the situation continues to develop. We are in full-scale hashtag lead, laugh, love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Oh, my God. I don't think I can tape. My back.
What a granny.
Ugh, where's my cushion?